More than a decade after a court ruling found that New York needed to make a significant increase into what it spends on educating children, Democratic state lawmakers and Governor Andrew Cuomo are responding, approving a state budget this month with big education funding increases and a commitment to fully fund that state obligation over the next 2 years. To explain how much the state is investing and what it could mean for schools all over New York, we spoke shortly after the last state budget bill was passed with Brian Chechnicki, Executive Director of the Association of School Business Officials of New York. Welcome back to the show, Brian, and thanks for joining us from the remote corners of New York.
Thanks for having me back.
Why don't you start by wowing us with the top-line funding numbers? How much is New York State going to spend on education in the new fiscal year, and how does that compare to what was in last year's budget?
So the state by itself, not counting the federal money that we're getting, is going to spend an additional $3 billion next year in school aid. In comparison to last year, essentially last year was flat when you count the CARES Act federal money that was passed last spring. And it was actually a $1 billion reduction if you don't count that money. So, we're talking a pretty significant increase. And even compared to historically, $3 billion is certainly the largest dollar increase in school aid. And I believe it's also the largest percentage increase. There were a few years that were about 10%. So I think this tops them as well. So overall, this is, certainly the largest investment in education that we've seen in a long time, if not in the history of the state.
You differentiated there between federal dollars and state dollars. And I know previously you and I have talked about how the state was going to go about using the federal stimulus money, whether it was the December stimulus or the American Rescue Plan in March. How is the state going about using federal dollars for education, and how much money do they have to spread around?
The governor's budget in January had been proposed before the American Rescue Plan was adopted, and so the sort of the fiscal plan at the time looked a little more dire for the state and for schools. And so, touching back on those conversations we had, the federal money at that time was going to be used to essentially supplant some stateside reductions. And so we were concerned about, swapping in one-time money for state money and the creation of what we call a fiscal cliff and what that means for school districts' fiscal outlook. With the passage of the American Rescue Plan, the state was in receipt of a significant amount of federal money to help plug some of those budget gaps. And so that, combined with some of the revenue raisers that this budget enacts, allowed the state to do a significant increase on the state aid to school districts and allow that federal money that districts will still be receiving to actually be used for those specific purposes that the Congress had expected. So, I think we'll be looking forward to districts using their additional foundation aid increase to sort of cover a lot of their ongoing regular costs. And this federal money will now be used for the purposes that the federal government intended, so covering things like addressing the learning loss that has occurred over the last year because of the pandemic, some of the physical needs of the district for bus routes and social distancing and all those sorts of things. And so districts will really be able to invest their ongoing state dollars in regular education and use the federal money to address the needs caused by the pandemic.
When we talk about state education aid, the bulk of that money is distributed through a foundation aid formula. Can you explain the root of that formula and the role it plays now in meeting the state's court-ordered funding obligations?
So the foundation aid formula, as you've alluded here, is the main operating aid formula that provides general support for school districts. And so, unlike some of the reimbursement-based aids like transportation, where districts spend money and get reimbursed for a portion of it, the foundation aid formula is a calculation that provides essentially an entitlement amount to each district. And that formula was enacted in 2007 as a result of years-long litigation against the state. And it was really built to ensure that school districts were receiving education funding that was based on the needs of the student. And so the formula has many moving parts to it, but largely it's meant to ensure that districts with high numbers of students that have significant needs through English language needs and economic status needs, those districts receive higher portions of state support in order to make sure that those programs are sound. what's happened in recent years after, you know, after only a couple years of actually using the formula, the Great Recession happened, and so the formula was essentially put on pause for a number of years alongside of a gap elimination adjustment that actually reduced state aid to school districts. So it's taken about 10 years to sort of get back to a point where the state was in a position to finally take a close look at putting districts back on the path to getting their full amount here. So what we're seeing in this budget is sort of the first down payment of what we hope is a three-year full phase-in with a $1.4 billion increase this year, followed by a promise for two more years of increases that will total, you know, around $4 billion over the 3 years, so that that every district is receiving at the end of this three-year period the full amount that the formula says they should be receiving.
Does anything stop the state from reversing course next year and saying, oops, you know, we can't afford this, we're not going to keep increasing the foundation aid formula?
So certainly the budget process is an annual one, and, you know, there are no guarantees when it comes to the budget, but I think it's important, and one of the things that we and other advocates in the field are very excited about is having the phase-in schedule in statute really changes the conversation moving forward. That, you know, for the last few years with it being frozen, the conversation has always been about trying to ask for more above that frozen level and also figure out what the most appropriate distribution of that is in the context of the overall budget and what other policy choices are being made. And so by putting this in law now, moving forward these next 3 years, whatever else may happen in these future budgets, there is a commitment now to fund this formula and likewise a commitment in the state's financial plan to see this through. And so the final phase-in won't happen until it happens, and things can always change, but I think it's a really important step going forward, both from an advocacy standpoint, but also for school district planning purposes, that, you know, districts can now look at what the formula says they should be getting and can start thinking about what that means for them over the next 2 years as, you know, as we hope to see this formula phased in.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're breaking down the record education funding in the state budget. And our guest is Brian Chechnicki, Executive Director of the Association of School Business Officials of New York. So if foundation aid is designed to go to the school districts with the most need for state support, does that mean this record funding increase is going primarily to those districts?
When we're looking at the distribution across districts, it's important to look at sort of two facets of it. One is the facet of what does this formula look like when it's fully phased in? And in that view, clearly the districts around the state with the highest needs among their students get the most money. The second facet, though, is the steps along the way to get to that point. And so I think, you know, as we're looking through the data, and there's still a lot to sort through and understand here, but because of the way that the formula has been frozen the last few years, there are a number of districts that are sort of behind where they should be in the phase-in schedule. And so part of what the legislature did in the formula this year is created sort of a catch-up phase-in, which got everybody to a basic level of 60% of the way towards their final formula goal. And so in this individual year, you do see some significant increases in districts that you might not otherwise expect them to receive, but it's really because they've been sort of behind over the last few years. And so this one-time catch-up has created some increases there. But again, with the overall goal of getting to a full phase-in within these next 3 years, you know, we're going to see significant investments in those high-need districts.
Are there any commonalities between the districts that are going to see the bigger increase because maybe they've been, you know, lagging under the previous allocations? You know, are rural schools going to get a big bump, urban schools, suburban? Are there any commonalities there?
I think there's actually multiple commonalities, and it really depends on the types of districts you're looking at. Districts that have lost a significant portion of their enrollment over recent years, a lot of those are rural districts. Those districts tend to be on what's called the safe harmless, meaning that they're already at their full phase-in level, and so they've been getting minimum increases. This year, they may have gotten a 2 or 3% increase, which is still much more than the minimum increase has been in recent years. You have other districts that might be growing in population or might even be growing just in the needs population. Maybe their student enrollment has been flat, but they have more students who have needs. Those districts may be further away from that full phase-in level now because the formula is saying, hey, you know, more students, more needs, you need more money. And so those are the types of districts that are likely seeing larger increases this year because that need is sort of swelling the amount of aid they're getting. And again, sort of the where we are in this schedule means that there's some amount of catching up to do for some of those districts.
Do you have any recommendations on how school districts should spend the infusion of cash they're getting? With the obvious, you know, caveat that each district has, you know, unique circumstances, but are there any sort of broad, smart rules of thumb that the district should follow when utilizing this new money?
The biggest rule of thumb is for districts to make sure that whatever they're doing with the money, they're doing it in a sustainable way. And so obviously the influx of the state money at the same time that we have all this federal money, there's a lot of programming that's going to come out of that. And it's important that districts look at what of that programming is going to be able to be maintained once the federal money goes away after these first couple of years. So we're going to be working with our membership to come up with what are the most effective ways to use that so that we're able to address the pandemic-related needs in terms of learning loss and those things. But also, you know, pivoting out of the pandemic and looking forward, what are ways that we can strengthen education across the state? So we're going to be spending a lot of time these next couple of months doing just that.
What are some examples of spending that would not be sustainable?
If a district were to take the one-time federal money and you know, decide to expand their staff without a plan for how you'll continue to fund that staff when the federal money goes away, it's a way to spend the money now and you've hired staff, but then 2 or 3 years from now, you'd have to look to potentially laying off that staff. And so I think that's going to vary within each individual district exactly what that looks like. But that's the type of thinking that that we're going to help districts work on, is to make sure that whatever plans they put in place today, either they know what the consequences are, and maybe you do want to stand up a temporary program and let staff go later on. But in case you don't want to do that, then we need to structure this in a way that that you're not in that position when those one-time funds go away.
Does the increase in state money mean that school districts can cut their local taxes?
This is a conversation that's going to be different in every school district. I think given where schools have been for the last 10 years, just in terms of overall fiscal health, you know, I think a lot of districts are going to be looking to ways to invest in their education. If districts look to do things with their taxes otherwise, you know, I think that's going to be certainly at a local decision. But with respect to tax reductions, in a world where we have a property tax cap, those reductions lead to less revenue in future years because your growth every year is capped. And so these are just some of the consequences of various proposals, I think, need to be thought out. And some districts may find that they do, in fact, want to move forward with that. But we're going to make sure that districts are thinking through those options and planning accordingly.
Based on my mouse pad from the Association of School Business Officials of New York, I see we have 9 more weeks to go in the legislative session. Any other proposals or policies that you are hoping get adopted between now and then?
The focus on these next couple of months really is going to be taking a hard look at this budget and trying to figure out what are the best ways that we can support school districts in sorting through all of these challenges.
Well, we've been speaking with Brian Chechnicki. He's the Executive Director of the Association of School Business Officials of New York. Brian, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Good to talk to you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.